Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Ben Standing here. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Thursday evening, and I decided I wanted to record another podcast this week. I did one with our pal Mike Smeltz going over some of the news of the day and with the ownership and offensive coordinator stuff. And like most of the podcasts we do about this team, you know, it tends to look at the negatives or the questions because, honestly, that's typically what we have to deal with around here. I decided to do something different this episode. This episode is looking at the positives from this past season, but not just anything that was better or good. Positives that will, we think, can carry over into what the Commanders are going to try to do this year. And joining me for that episode, our pal Matt Paris from the Washington Times. We each went back and forth sharing what we thought stood out from this season, and then again, what we think can help this team going forward. We talked about some players. We talked about some numbers, some other variables, even the fans a little bit. So I think you guys will enjoy this. It's at least a little bit of a change of pace, but of course, wasn't every word wasn't, you know, a ray of sunshine. We had to, you know, contrast it here and there with some other things. And we did also discuss some of the news of the day, specifically with offensive coordinator. Ravens today fired offensive coordinator, or I should say parted ways with offensive coordinator Greg Roman. Tampa Bay Bucks let go offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich. Do we think either of those guys make sense for Washington? We discussed that. Lamar Jackson's in the news a little bit. We pondered his future and perhaps could the Commanders be anywhere involved with that, and a bunch more. So hopefully you guys will like this and take you into the weekend with some positive vibes here on the podcast, which you can find on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you do your podcasting. And of course, make sure you check out The Athletic. A few new stories from me this week, including most recent one, sort of just a checklist of what Washington needs to accomplish this offseason. And Matt and I did a little bit of that here as well. So make sure you can follow me on Twitter at Ben Standing. You can follow Matt on Twitter at Matthew_Paris, P-A-R-A-S. No need for much of an intro here. Let's just get right to it. Matt Paris and I getting positive, talking about the Commanders here on the Standing Room Only podcast. All right, before we get too far away from the 2022 season, obviously it ended on a bummer note, but there were some positives along the way. It's not all doom and gloom, even though it always feels like it is and probably is. But we're going to try just to get a little more, to try to note some of the positives that came out of this year and maybe how these things can help Washington going forward. Who else to have on to help this the conversation? Mr. Sunshine himself, Matt Paris from the Washington Times. You know, some people are, you know, born for certain duties. I mean, this one is right up your alley.
Oh, yeah. That's me, Mr. Positive. So I would say I would actually say, unironically, I am an optimistic guy.
Yeah, no. Like, if we rated the people on the beat based on that, I won't say who's at the bottom. I'm a candidate. But you and ironically enough, the other person I have on here the most, Michael Phillips, would probably be the at the top. Michael's probably the one seed, but you are you're not far behind.
I've never seen Michael mad. So
yeah, it's odd. It's odd, especially considering the team we cover. I mean, there's always, you know, it's just the job we all have in general. You know, there's always like crazy things come out of the blue or deadlines or whatever, but yeah, he's always in a good mood. Ron Rivera tries to be a positive guy. He often tells us that. I think sometimes that gets him into some trouble, though, when it comes to some of the choices he makes. But we're going to try to, you know, point out here some of the positive things that have happened before. And like, I think there's some statistics, there's some player development, and how does any of this translate to what they have on going forward? Before we get to that, though, we're talking on Thursday early evening. And I mentioned that in part because, you know, we're at a point now where the news is constantly evolving, particularly with this offensive coordinator search. As of today, they have now interviewed three people, former Browns and Giants head coach Pat Shurmur. They have interviewed current Washington quarterback coach Ken Zampezi, and they have interviewed Falcons quarterback coach Charles London. Daryl Bevel turned down the chance to interview with them. They're still waiting to hear from Eric Studsville, the Dolphins running back coach, to set up an interview possibly there. And we'll see what else unfolds. Where are you at right now as far as what they've done, what they're looking at, who they should be talking to? Where are you at?
Yeah, a lot of the rumored candidates kind of make sense. Shurmur, they were interested in him in the first go-around before hiring Scott Turner. Zampezi is a guy that knows the offense if they want to stay with the same scheme. Charles London is a name that I don't think any of us had probably expected going into this, but it's an interesting option. I mean, with the way that the Falcons run game was last year, to be able to pick a guy's brain like that, at least to see what they have going on, it is, I think, a smart thing to do, even if he doesn't get the job. But yeah, you know, I think this process might take a little bit. I don't know necessarily what the rush is. I don't think they're necessarily attracting top candidates to get there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And there were some other intriguing names that became available today, depending on how you feel about Byron Leftwich and Greg Roman.
Yeah, I think the Greg Roman one is particularly interesting. I mean, I maintain my point from the moment they fired Scott Turner that they will not have their choice of candidates, that anybody with options is going to look elsewhere. And it's sort of playing out to an extent, both in terms of who they've brought in and people they've targeted. The people that they've targeted who've had some more options have kind of either given them the Heisman or haven't come in or whatever. And those who are either sort of to the extreme on one end, like Shurmur, and, you know, like he's been there, done that, but he's also been, you know, he's had some dicey seasons, including, you know, the reason why his head coaching record is pretty limited. And then you have the other example you mentioned, London, a guy who has no offensive coordinator experience. That would be a completely different merger. But I think Roman's interesting only from the standpoint of it doesn't matter whether we agree or disagree with Ron Rivera's idea that they want to be his run first team. It's not a 2-to-1 ratio, but just that they want to be run first. Then lean into that. Don't go, you know, getting somebody who's like a pass happy coordinator to then just like be butting heads the whole time. If this is what you actually want to do, lean into it. And Greg Roman has been a coordinator for 10 years with three different teams. His teams have always finished top 10 in rush attempts and rush yards. And some of that is you have quarterbacks like Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson, but Sam Howell runs a lot too. So it could potentially make some sense. So to that end, I think it makes sense. But beyond that, you know, we'll see what kind of options Greg Roman has.
Yeah. I mean, to add on that, I think the thing you could knock Roman for in Baltimore was that they didn't really have the receivers to have a productive passing game, that his system maybe didn't attract the top wide receivers to come play in Baltimore. Well, you don't really have that problem in Washington. You actually have a great trio of receivers with Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, and Curtis Samuel. So having those weapons already in place, is he willing to sling it a little bit more? I do think that, long story short, Commanders wide receivers good, Baltimore receivers bad. Maybe it works out if they hire Roman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. In terms of like Byron Leftwich, since he was also fired today, that to me is a hard pass. I don't typically like, except for the Rams with Sean McVay, I just generally don't like taking a coach or a coordinator coming out of a scenario where the person above him is essentially running that side of the ball. And that's what's going on with Tampa. Bruce Arians was there. They crushed. This year, Bruce Arians is gone. They went from a top 10 offense to, you know, one of the worst in the league. I believe they were last in rushing, which obviously goes against what Rivera looking to do. So whatever the circumstances were, you know, Tampa's offensive line was all banged up. Tom Brady's 100, whatever you want to tell me, not coming off a good year. So I would be out on him. We will see more names. And if there's more names to add before I get to posting this podcast, I will do it. I'll do so in the intro. What else was random? Oh, are you interested in going to Germany this season? They announced the five games overseas. One of them is a New England Patriots game, and the Patriots are Washington is playing at New England this year. So hypothetically, that could be a game. What do you think? You want to go?
Yeah, I don't know if my work would send me though. Oh, selfishly, I hope it's in Boston because the Bills have never been to Boston. So, even though Foxborough is not Boston,
yeah,
but, you know, I know what the Washington Times, you know, the budget probably isn't going to let me go to that type of trip. So, you know, fingers crossed, I'll work my way toward it. But, you know, if we'll see.
I have been to Germany. I have not been to Foxborough. So, I wouldn't mind going overseas, but yeah, if the worst case is, we go to New England, I'm cool with that. I have not, check another one off of the list.
Is that how does that compare with like London, Mexico City, the places that the NFL is playing? Like,
I'd like to go to London. I've never been to London. So that would be pretty cool, and to use it for that reason, that would be great. I've not been to Mexico City either. I would rank that third on of those three. I mean, just because the going to the Europe part just seems, a cooler deal. And I have not been to Frankfurt. They said the games would be either split one Munich, one Frankfurt, or both Frankfurt. I think I saw Albert Breer mention this. So I haven't been there. I have no idea what goes on there. So at least that would be different than
I look forward to hanging out with Mitch in Germany.
He's a celebrity. I also haven't been to Munich since I was in my 20s, so it's not like it hasn't been recent or anything. All right, and last randomness, Lamar Jackson today there was a press conference in discussing Greg Roman's exit, but the Ravens are saying, hey, we want Lamar Jackson, he's our guy, and Lamar Jackson is still. They basically said, we want him, but it's got to be a two-way street. And Lamar Jackson's been very cryptic this whole time. In terms of the Commanders, what is so ironic about this, like, it's not even a matter that hypothetically we would all say Dan Snyder wants to get this guy. This guy is already the most popular athlete in the state in which the team plays their home games. So if you could actually get Lamar Jackson, this would be the ultimate win-win. It's not even a matter of that he would be an upgraded quarterback. It was like you already have a built-in, you know, thing. I know it's a Ravens fan thing, but I'm sure there are people who would cross over. The irony is, of course, that we're at a point where Dan Snyder is not only potentially at least on the way out, but at a minimum, I can't imagine he would spend the money to do it. So
that's a move that, like, if the stars are aligned and the new ownership comes in, that's like the splashy new move. You know, Bill Simmons always calls it the owner syndrome of trying to make that splashy move. So, maybe it would be, excuse my phone call there. My DePaul University is trying to get more money from me. So,
well, I mean, as they should, you cheap jerk. So Lamar Jackson, again, I'm only mentioning it because it's just so funny that, you know, we're so used to Dan Snyder spending, at least historically, a little bit less so in the last few years, but even then, you know, you make the move to get Alex Smith, give him a lot of money, Josh Norman, and so on. So I don't see that happening. They've already sort of thrown their lot in with Sam Howell to an extent. He's got to earn the job. But by saying that, they at a minimum, they're getting us to talk about something else, not Carson Wentz and all that. And at a maximum, they're going to go with a cheaper option at that position and hope for the upside and then add on a Taylor Heineke, a Jacoby Brissett someone like that. I guess, like, so to spin this to the conversation we're going to have about the positives, like, I guess to an extent you could say Sam Howell is one, but, you know, he only played the one game, and it's more of a hope than it is true positive. And what I wanted to do is, like, all right, let's not brush aside things that stood out from this past year that hopefully can be a positive. And I said this to you when we were getting before we started, like, as an example, we're not going to discuss an offensive line the way Rivera did last year that he kept citing was like sixth ranked in PFF, knowing that Brandon Scherff is not coming back. We're all like, well, that's not a real positive going forward. So we're going to try to avoid those things and focus on what could help this team going forward. I'll let you've won the toss. Would you like to receive or defer?
I'll receive, because I would like to start with the Rivera-ish thing that you said not to. But I think the defensive line was a real positive. Now, I know there's a huge caveat there with Jerron Payne, whether he comes back or not. But even if he doesn't, Jonathan Allen played lights out. Montez Sweat had, I think, the best year of his career. Even the games Chase Young played down the stretch, I thought, were very encouraging. And they just kind of showed that discipline that was really lacking in 2021. It looked much more like the group than it did in 2020. And frankly, I thought in stretches played even better than they did in 2020. So I thought that was a really positive development. And we'll see if they can continue. But
yeah, no,
I thought there were some reasons to be encouraged.
I agree. I mean, look. We don't have an idea right now what their plan is on all kinds of fronts in terms of building the roster, and totally get the idea of, like, hey, Jerron Payne had a fantastic year, 11 and a half sacks, career high, was pretty dominant throughout. Today was, in fact, one of the things I meant to note is today he was officially added to the Pro Bowl roster because Aaron Donald pulled out and Jerron Payne was the first alternate. So congrats to him on that. It's amazing. The team that didn't make the playoffs has five players in this Pro Bowl games thing. Anyway, and I get why. I mean, look, the defensive line was the strength of this team this year for real, because everybody else, with Chase Young out, really stepped up. But you're right. Even if Payne leaves, you know, I'm not saying he would be easily replaced, but they do have Fedarian Mathis coming back off the injury. That was a second round pick. John Ridgeway was interesting. All the defensive ends, should they bring back F.A. Obada, James Smith Williams, Casey Tuhill, were at least solid. Like, I don't recall too many times this year any of us going, oh boy, that what a disaster over there. And, you know, obviously they can, you know, if Payne were to go, they could add, you know, another defensive tackle. Plus, you know, are you trading Payne? Maybe you get some stuff. So I don't think it's like the worst thing in the world if they did move on to an extent. A third round compensatory might be kind of, but okay. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, the defensive line this year was the first time really since this whole group has been together that they were, you know, a cohesive unit, and week in, week out were really pretty good. I mean, I don't think there were too many games where I was going, boy, that group's a mess.
Yeah, the only time that stuck out to me was the Detroit game where they were being run all over the place.
And even that, like that one, like the Monsant Ross, like Brown one where it goes around the end, like that seemed like a mistake. I think it was like William Jackson was just completely not noticing.
That was before Jamin Davis's growth.
Right. So, you know, no, I'm with you. I do think it is a rare, like, right, when Scherff left, it's like, whoa, he's the one Pro Bowler they have, and the rest of it is a bunch of guys named Mo or Journeyman or, you know, whatever. You know, I'm not dismissing Charles Leno, but, like, you know, I mean, like, you know, I don't know, we'll see. The defensive line would still have a Pro Bowler in Allen, like you said, and Sweat was an alternate, and Chase Young obviously has a lot of potential. So I'm with you. I thought that was a pretty good group. And also, like, the defense as a whole was much better this year. Yeah. And that was sort of the anchor for the whole thing.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about the defense, not to veer this into the negative zone.
Oh, boy.
But whether how much can they actually maintain to where they were at, you know, being much better on third down as they will, does that number dip back down? They were really reliant on turnovers during that winning streak. So does that come back to earth? That's a worries me a little bit, but they have a lot of talent on this roster on that side of the ball. And so, yeah, I'll let you go next with your positive.
Well, you actually kind of mentioned it. Third down defense. We spent all of last year, rightfully so, just right. completely mocked.
The preseason doing it. Think about that Carolina game.
Yeah, absolutely right. The preseason, the third down defense was a mess. They were 31st last year, and they needed a surge to avoid not only coming in last, but having one of the worst third down defensive numbers of all time. And this year, they were first in third down defense. I mean, that's obviously a huge deal. And look, to be clear, we're not ignorant of the fact that this was not a year that they played tons of elite quarterbacks the way they did the previous year, right? I mean, they played some good ones. I mean, they faced Jalen Hurts a couple times, Dak Prescott, whatever, but like they also got, the AFC South and some other ones. So they did whatever they had to do to go from, I don't care who you're playing, to go from 31st to first is significantly notable. I think that the whole defense as in general, I think really just played well together for the most part. And I think you can really look at when this isn't exactly the same thing, but I was looking this up the other day when William Jackson, he got, what was it? Week 8, 7 that was the trade deadline.
Yeah, well, he was benched in week 5.
Right, benched in week 5 from trade deadline about that time. From week 8 on, Washington allowed the second fewest, what True Media calls explosive plays, runs of 12 or more yards and passes of 16 or more yards of gains. They allowed 25 of those in the first 5 weeks when Jackson was at least active or playing. And I think that really helped shore things up, including the third down defense. So, kudos. And even like once when Benjamin St. Juice was missing games, I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't missed, but they were still able to sort of maintain some good form there. So, and also Cole Holcomb.
Johnson's music.
Well, look, I mean, Arrowhead. I mean, look, Cole Holcomb missed more than half the year. And if you had told me that before the season, I would have been like, oh boy, because their linebacker depth is non-existent and somehow they were able to cobble it together. So, collectively, I think they played well as a unit. You give credit to Jack Del Rio, but anyway, that's my positive. The third down defense, and if they can keep this group together, and figure out what they're going to do at linebacker, add some corner depth, hopefully they can keep it up.
Yeah, I will say I'm just kind of toggling between tabs. Like Buffalo last year, they ranked first at 33%. They fell to sixth this year. As long as they can stay above average, they don't have to be first or even top 5, as long as they're kind of just solid. Like even a team like Dallas, they were ranked second in 2021. They were 15th this year. I think we would all consider Dallas's defense to still be really good, even if they weren't as strong. So I think it's something to be encouraged about. I just wonder how sustainable it is, but they have the talent, which I guess to focus on the defense again is, I thought the safety play, to have two legitimate young safeties, was very promising. And it actually kind of gives me, not hope because I'm not a fan of the team, I don't really care, but, Percy Butler, I'm interested to see how he develops given their track record of finding Derek Forrest and finding Cam Curl. Those two guys, I thought, really progressed as the year went along, especially for us, because we kind of already knew what Curl could do.
Right. I mean, I was saying, and I think correctly, that the Cam Curl Bobby McCain combo, not simply saying it was the greatest combo I've ever, but for Washington, it's probably the best tandem they've had in years, because we've all gone through the iterations when you bring in the haha Clinton Dixes and go cycle through DJ Swearingers and whoever, and nothing ever really seemed to click. Now, look, we're not prepared to say Derek Forrest is the next Ken Houston or anything, but obviously he had a wildly impressive season after barely playing any defense. He led the team in interceptions, was a real sort of rock 'em sock 'em presence back there. And we saw with Cam Curl, not counting the Dallas game, the other 4 games he missed, they lost all those games, and their defense really looked fairly messy. He's proven to be outside of maybe a couple of the defensive linemen, and probably the most valuable player on the defense, certainly the most versatile in the back seven. He's got a contract extension coming up here, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm with you. I think the secondary at large, but the safeties in particular, and also, look, I know Jeremy Reeves wasn't really playing a ton of safety, but, you know, he
like Jeremy Reeves' game even more than the special team stuff, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, but he came in, and, you know, I also thought it was interesting that they moved Bobby McCain over to sort of that nickel position. It's funny because Bobby McCain didn't balk at it the way Landon Collins did last year. We didn't really have the whole conversation of, hey, a guy switching positions. Well, you know, what a deal. Now, he used to be a corner back in the day, so it's not that big of a deal. But, yeah, by the way, Buffalo nickel, would we need to put that up on a wanted poster or missing beside of milk cartons or things like that? What happened to that position?
I would still say it's part of that just because, you know, that they did fill. They've yet to have a traditional slot corner, I guess.
Right. I'm just mostly joking at the fact that we don't use the term anymore. It became such a
Jimmy Moreland, you know, like,
for her, right. It just
for the days of your guy in the middle, you know.
Yeah. For sure. By the way, I, if I've already said this on here, I apologize. I really do forget sometimes where I say things here or the radio or somewhere. I think I wrote this the other day, but I don't know if I've said this to you, that Jeremy Reeves makes the Pro Bowl this year as a special teams player. First year he's made the active roster for week one.
Troy Apke, is this where you're going?
Right. And the fact that, like, essentially the previous 2 years, really? He more or less was beat up by Troy Apke, a player they did not draft. It's not like they had felt beholden to it. And primarily because Troy Apke, that was always the line. I parroted it. Well, Troy Apke's really good on special teams. And then they go the other way, and this guy makes the Pro Bowl. That's just pretty wild. I don't know what that means, but just notable there for sure. All right, let me come up with a positive. You know, I would say, you know, let's just give it up to Curtis Samuel. Obviously, the 2021 season the year for him was pretty miserable. I know when I talked to him a few times during the year, including at the end, you know, I think he really did seem to be a guy that had a lot of appreciation for what he went through and where he was this season. I would like to have seen them get, you know, especially over the second half of the year, it felt like they just weren't being as productive getting him the ball, but that was obviously an issue with the offense at large. But, you know, he was able to play the whole season. He showed what he can do, how effective he can be. You know, we don't know who the offensive coordinator is, and we'll therefore have to see how he's used. You also have Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, so they have plenty of options there. But just the fact that Curtis Samuel showed, you know, he could stay on the field, because it was such a weird mystery the year before, and we're all kind of like, oh boy. And then even back in training camp, right, he's like sitting out for a few days. They're doing the whole like, we got to rest him, and we're like, really? You got to nurse him through training? Yeah, you got to nurse him through practices. Like, what does it? How does this bode? And, you know, fortunately, he was able to do some good stuff. It started in week one with Jacksonville, and, you know, at least was still on the field the whole time.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, it was, you know, we stopped looking over at the side field to see if he was there. If he wasn't.
Yeah, that's always one of those deals, like, where we're all like kind of making bits about it. Like, you know, when it's over and over again, we're having to discuss the side field, and became the, you know, is this going to be the Curtis Samuel, you know, side field? And then
Samuel would be like a hacky nickname that would have caught on, probably. I'm joking, but I mean, that if I was like a Skip Bayless type or whatever, like, that's what you could go with. I mean, I'm not like that, but
he was
on track last year to earn that sort of nickname.
For sure. Now, let me ask you this. Ron Rivera is talking, and Martin Mayhew, about they want to be this run-first thing. Again, I think 2-to-1 ratio is overstated, but they're saying, we just want to be clear, we want to be a run-first team. And one of the questions I think a lot of us have had is, okay, you got Brian Robinson, you want that mentality, fine. But look at the investment you're making in some other areas, including at receiver. You just gave Terry McLaurin a massive contract extension. You just used a first-round pick on Jahan Dotson. and you gave Samuel a big deal the year before. Does it therefore make sense to have that level of investment at a position? I'm not saying this isn't the wishbone. They're going to throw the ball. But do you need that level of investment at receiver if, in fact, you are going to be more run first? We know they have to fix the offensive line. So here's my question. Curtis Samuel, his cap hit this year, $13 million. Yeah. His dead cap, 7.2. So that's just a little less than $6 million they would save towards the cap by releasing him. I'm looking at this, doing some quick math here. So if that's the case, would you be in favor of them saying, you know what, we are going to move on from Curtis Samuel because we still have weapons? They also have, you know, De'Ami Brown. They could re-sign Cam Sims. You can always feel like you can find a receiver in the draft. And plus, like, the three top receivers are all not – they're all the same size, basically. Like, you don't have a big red zone target in there if you want somebody different. Or do you say, are you serious? He's a playmaker. They need guys on this team. We don't know what J.D. McKissick's future is, so he could sort of be that almost quasi, like, a third back. Where would you be in favor of that one?
Yeah, I would maintain he's keeping around. I don't know what you would do with the money. You're already going to free up sizable room by cutting Wentz. So, you know, you could go after Daron Payne that way. You know, there are other guys. Like, I'd rather personally, like, if we're talking about saving significant money, I mean, I think Logan Thomas, like, just wrote about this today, so I should have the number in front of me, but Logan Thomas would save $5 million. Cutting someone like that, I think, makes more sense rather than Curtis Samuel. And look, I mean, if they want to be a run-first offense and be a creative run-first offense, Curtis Samuel helps with that. You know, having that added element, I actually think that was one of the things Scott Turner did well, is mixing him in and having sort of creative packages to utilize the different receivers. It was just a matter. Scott Turner's problem was, you know, when certain plays were called rather than the designs themselves. But, you know, I think we've seen ways that Curtis Samuel can be used creatively, and he would be a positive for Washington's run first offense.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I think I would advocate for keeping him, but, you know, if you sort of swap out Wentz for Daron Payne's franchise tag or whatever, and then now you don't have a ton more money to play around with, okay, then where are you going to get it from? And there are some other avenues, like you mentioned, but to go to an extreme, it would be at least something I would have to consider, especially with how good Dotson looked. And like I said, if you're going to be this, I'm not saying you don't throw the ball, it's not like 80-20, but I'm just saying, you know, it's something to at least consider that I don't think people have discussed enough. Or at a minimum, you may need to consider giving him an extension, like to add, like, you know, renegotiating the number, because $13 million is a pretty big hit for a guy who I look up how many touches he had, but he didn't have like an exorbitant amount of touches or anything.
Right. They could add void years or whatever. I think a guy that if you wanted to clear space like that, you know, I didn't actually mention him in the article I wrote about cap casualties or whatever, but I was looking at it. A guy like Charles Leno, he would save $8 million if you were to theoretically draft a young left tackle that you felt confident in at 16 or whatever. And just kind of what happened to Charles Leno in Chicago, honestly, is they drafted Tevin Jenkins. They said, all right, we're good, see ya. And they cut him. Now that ended up being a massive mistake for Chicago, so maybe that would be a warning sign not to do it. But that's a way that you could free up significant money without.
Yeah.
There are just other ways to do it, is my point.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, just looking at touches for the year, Brian Robinson, Brian Robinson, 214. Antonio Gibson, 195. Curtis Samuel, 102. Terry McLaurin, 84. You know who was fifth in touches for the Commanders this year?
Wait, say that again.
Robinson, Gibson, Samuel McLaurin. Who was fifth?
Was it still Logan Thomas?
It was not. It was J.D. McKissick. Despite missing most of the year. I mean, Jahan Dotson is like eighth. I mean, he did miss some games, but it also goes to show they just weren't, you know, spreading the ball around between all these guys.
Right. I mean, he missed a lot of time, though. But
he didn't miss as much as McKissick.
Right.
But anyway.
Can we stay on Robinson? Because
that's a positive.
That should have led the show. I mean, the man had an incredible year after being shot. Like that's insane. And I thought the way he developed as the year went on was really encouraging. Now, he ended the year a little bit banged up. That's the nature of the position. But there was that one – there was the Falcons game where he was over, I think, 100 yards for the first time. That, to me, was like, whoa, this offense can maybe actually be something if they get, like, sustainable quarterback play. Like, this adds another element to their offense that they were missing previously. And I think as he starts to get more comfortable, he'll start ripping off those longer 10 to or 15 to 20 yard runs that maybe weren't there this year.
Right. I mean, to the he almost helped undersell his return to an extent because there was almost no hiccup. He comes off IR. He plays. I'm thinking, you know, like we saw with Chase Young, he went beyond the 21 day practice opportunity that you get coming, you know, before you come off IR. He didn't have any of it. Brian Robinson came in, began practicing immediately, played the first game. By the next game, he was already getting the full load essentially at running back. And it was almost like, you know, he had been out because of a sprained ankle, not because of something that was literally that, you know, that serious. So a really impressive year for sure. And, you know, when they talk about being a run first team, you can't say that if you don't have that guy. And he really, you know, his ability to take on blockers, I think that's going to be an interesting sort of deep dive to look at it more, is like when he's having to take on three and four tacklers, I mean, not blockers, tacklers, and he's pulling them, how much is that because the line just wasn't helping him? And how much is that like, you know, he still has some questions about some vision, or maybe he wasn't as, you know, didn't have that second gear perhaps because of the physical circumstances or whatever. But yeah, a wildly impressive year in general, let alone because of where he was coming from.
Yeah, and I want to see what he does with rushing out behind a line that's actually respectable, that's actually like athletic and can kind of move. You know, I think Washington was fairly limited by what they had on the interior this year. I mean, how we talked about it all year, but, you know, moving Sam Cosmi to guard, does he become comfortable there? Does he become that kind of mauler that pushes the line, and does Robinson get behind it? Because as impressive as his year was, he still only averaged 3.9 yards a carry. Some of that is situational stuff, but you would like that number to be over four at the very least.
For sure. All right, I'm looking to see here. Where else can I go here with the, okay, well, you mentioned safety specifically, so I will mention cornerback. You know, we knew going into the year, they really, after Fuller and Jackson and St. Juice, it was like, okay, who's the fourth guy, right? And that became even more curious after training camp when they cut Danny Johnson and Corn Elder and put them both on IR, and they pick up a couple, you know, highly inexperienced players. And you're like, wait, what's going on here? And while moving on from Jackson was a pretty reasonable decision, it still meant they were incredibly thin at that position. But St. Juice came in and really just immediately, you know, took over as the outside guy. And that was also at that point, you mentioned the turnovers earlier, where they really got more aggressive. I mean, he should have had a couple of interceptions himself that he ultimately couldn't.
Had a couple because of St. Juice.
Right. But I thought St. Juice was really impressive. And I think, you know, Kendall Fuller is just a total rock on the other side. The fact that he had two pick sixes is sort of the highlight, but he was just, you know, largely pretty steady all year. They still have questions behind those guys. I mean, I Danny Johnson did do a pretty good job late in the year, but at the same time, it's sort of how I view with Heinicke. It doesn't really matter what he did. They clearly have not viewed him as somebody that they consider to be a top, you know, rotation player guy. So I think that's a position that they'll have to add some depth to. But nonetheless, St. Juice was good. The question for him is, it's now 2 years in a row that he's missed several games with injuries. Needless to say, for any position, that's not great. And they got to, you know, these injuries were all kind of different, I think, by the most part, you know, concussion last year, ankle this year. But what, you know, where are they at with that? That would be my question. But in general, I thought Benjamin St. Juice stepped up, and so did Fuller, Danny Johnson, guys who had to play more. Well, at least in Johnson's case, did as well.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, I think some of that goes to coaching, you know, we like talking to Chris Harris, but beyond the media part of the job, the obligations is, you know, teams are interested in him. He's gotten looks at coordinators. We probably need to check on to see what happened with him and the Titans. The Titans expressed interest for Chris Harris for a role on their staff. I don't necessarily think there's any update there, but you know, this is a guy I think sooner or later is going to be a coordinator in this league and maybe even a head coach one day. He's really sharp.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. You are up. I went corner. You got anything else?
Gonna go a little bit off the board here, but it's been circling on Twitter I think it's aged well, is I'm gonna go the way that they were able to trade down in the draft, and I think that's aged well. Maybe that helps them going into this offseason, but what they were able to do moving back from 11 to 16, getting Jahan Dotson, the pick that turned into Brian Robinson and Cole Turner.
And Sam Howell,
yeah. Just bravo, well done. And, you know, anytime you trade back, teams are going to benefit from it. But that one I thought was really noticeable just given how.
Well, it's funny, right? You know, because for years, people kept pointing to the RG3 trade, and here's all the people that the Rams got, and that game when they played the Rams, and the Rams brought all these guys out for the coin toss. But ultimately, most of that really kind of fizzled out. They didn't really get a ton of guys who were mainstays, and you know, it's only been 1 year, but right, I mean, very good player, but like, you know, but it wasn't like the totality of it. All at the moment, at least if we're talking about hope, you've got Jahan Dotson, who looked, you know, he led the team in touchdowns.
That you need to lead with this take. The Dotson trade was better than the RG3 trade. My column.
Well, I'm just saying, like, Dotson, Brian. I mean,
it's not terrible. I'm agreeing with you, but yeah. that is such. Next time you're on with Hoffman, lead with that, because that is such a good segment. Oh my god.
Well, look, if hypothetically they did move on from Logan Thomas and Cole Turner were to start somehow. They would have, from this trade, Logan, Jahan Dotson, Brian Robinson, Sam Howell, Cole Turner, all in the starting lineup.
Oh, man. My favorite week of training camp was the week that Cole Turner looked like he was going to be the next big star here. I mean, that was what a week that dude had, and it never really materialized after that.
But. I brought this up at some point again. I may have told you at the time. I don't remember. You know, where I was talking before about touches. If I had told you before the season, week one, yeah, that Reggie Bonifant, who was only on the roster for the last game, would get more touches, 3, than Cole Turner this year, 2, be like, what? It didn't work out there for a variety of reasons, but Cole Turner actually did show some good things as a blocker, and you know,
he got leaped by Armani Rogers. Rogers showed enough growth that he, by the time that Cole Turner was healthy and ready to go, it was, okay, now it's Armani Rogers. And then the season actually kind of started for real. And so, you know, Logan Thomas, yeah, hot dates. You're not going to take a chance on a fifth-round rookie when you have Thomas.
Right, and to that, right, exactly. I mean, it was, once he got hurt in training camp and then missed some time, it just never really quite caught up. But, you know, he did some good things, and you know, somebody that they'll at least have to, you know, put in the mix in their head of what do we have here going forward. I actually still think tight end's a pretty big position that they should be looking to upgrade somehow this offseason. So, but yeah, that's still a wild stat. All right, I'm going to go crazy here. You and I are at all the home games.
Yeah.
We know that a lot of the fans are not coming out anymore. And we know a lot of the fans that were there, especially early on, the ones who were chanting, you know, sell the team and booing Tonya Snyder and all that stuff, not thrilled. But I would say that, like, especially as the season progressed, and granted, they were winning some more games, that helped. I do feel like the crowds were actually, you know, pretty decent. And you know, the ones who were there were pretty vocal. Like, there, you know, there weren't, I'm not saying there weren't some games where it felt like you were playing somewhere else. And admittedly for us in the press box, it's a little hard to hear sometimes because of the glass. But like I'm saying, later in the year, the people that went were responsive and into it. And it wasn't just simply, you know, 80% the other team and everybody's just booing the whole time and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just saying I'm giving credit to the fans. I know a lot of them have peeled off And maybe that changes, you know, when Dan Snyder, should he sell the team? But I'm just, you know, I'm just giving props to the people who show up all the time, put, you know, get, you know, they still either get excited or just like the experience, and especially over the second half of the year.
I agree with you, Glenn Contour, that shouting out the fans is...
Is that my Glenn Contour move?
every on-court Wizards interview he does, how about these fans, to my amusement. But
hey, look,
no shade, it was not a knock. That man is very respected.
Yes, absolutely. And look, I'm being serious, but if you want to
love the bit, it's so funny to me.
And if you agree with me, you can follow me at Ben Standing on Twitter, and you know, we'll go from there.
Not to shit on the fans, but I thought the Cleveland game was really kind of a weird, it was a must win for them. It was the lowest attended crowd of the year. Now, of course, that's New Year's Day, but
yeah,
Detroit didn't have that problem when they were fighting for a playoff race, and their attendance was crappy a few years ago too. So, and not to mention the way that Carson Wentz was booed, and maybe the pressure that created on him. I don't know how helpful that was.
Sure. Well, look, I don't I don't want people being completely Pollyanna and telling me, you know, it's raining outside when I know I'm getting spit on, right? Like, it's, you got to be realistic.
I don't knock the fans.
And look, there was obviously a lot of people questioning the idea of even starting Carson Wentz in that game. He throws that early pick and immediately, you know, things went south. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, no, I just thought it was notable that, like, a couple players, Brian Robinson told a reporter, you know, Montez Sweat mentioned to me that he thought it got in Carson's head, and so on and so forth. But you know, the energy was a lot better at games this year, and the way that traffic has improved at that stadium is so much better now. It's night and day.
Well, can we actually say that though? Because we get there so early and leave so late. Because I know people who still tell me
true, but
even going in, like, even. We would get there the same time, so like the great, maybe we just park in a different location, but going in and off Garrett Morgan Boulevard is much smoother than lining up for the gray lot and stuff. So maybe that is where we park.
Right. By the way, if we were going to do the negative part, since we're talking about the stadium, we've now gone through an entire year. We had this whole deal about they got to get something done at some point this calendar year at a minimum to, you know, get going in the time frame they want. And we understand what happened, you know, all the areas, you know, DC, Virginia, Maryland, all more or less pulled out or offered very minimal. So we get what happened, but I'm just saying that is a thing that happened. They have not progressed in that. Of course, now we're just waiting for the new ownership situation. Should that occur? I'm not going to assume anything yet, but once that happens, you know, what, other than the owner saying Ron Rivera is safe, whatever, that's gotta be next thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Virginia. Hi, Maryland. Hi, DC. Who wants to talk to us?
Right. No, I mean, it seemed like they were on the 2-yard line with Virginia or whatever, and then dust up and all these other people.
Yeah, they went to check the replay, and we're like, oh wait, what are we about to do here?
Who are
we
about to get in the 50? Sorry.
right. Instead of being first and goal, it's now first and goal from year 30.
Right. What game? There was a game like that this year, wasn't there? Or it was like a screenshot of just like first and goal from like the 40. I don't remember.
Yeah. All right. We've already done a bunch of these things. Do you have any other positives? At this point, you don't necessarily have to, but I just I'll just say this: we didn't really mention him exactly. You mentioned the trade. You know, kudos to Jahan Dotson, right? I mean, they took a lot of heat for that pick. I mean, it's not like Jahan Dotson was like definitively picked insanely too early, but it was the ceiling of where, and maybe even a little like pushed through the ceiling a little bit of where people thought he could go. But he from the moment we saw him at practice at rookie camp and OTAs, it seemed like there was no doubt that this kid was ready to go. He's probably the best route runner on the team now, and was like, you know, during the season, you know, didn't have a lot of catches, but the 7 touchdowns, obviously impressive. You know, he played bigger than he is. you know, and it even, you know, it took him a second to work his way back after the injury, but he played really well. And I think, like, you know, kudos to them, but kudos to him for a really smooth transition.
No, yeah, and to stick on the first round of things, I thought Jamin Davis's development this year, we mentioned it earlier, was actually really impressive. But I think the last time I was on your pod, I brought up this point of, like, if you think of the 2021 draft class, you would say, oh, Cosme's a great find, but everyone else will have to see. Where this year it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, Davis and everyone else but Cosme, you know, you feel a little bit better about it. It was just kind of weird how it turned in that sense. But I thought Jamin Davis and the way that he responded to coaches calling him out, maybe we made too much of that as a media thing, but I actually think it did work on him in a positive way. I thought it was an effective thing.
I totally agree on that front. All right, I'll just ask you this and then we can go. What, there's a lot of balls up in the air right now. You got the offensive coordinator situation. You've got the quarterback. I mean, I know what they're saying about Sam Howell, but, you know, we'll see what happens when we get a little bit closer. It's still super early to make any claims, and they've already said he's still got to win the job, but whatever. Offensive coordinator, how they address the rest of the quarterback room. You know, what do they do with Deron Payne? Other topics as well. What for you is the thing that if they do this, I mean, that will make you feel positive about whatever, you know, whatever's going to happen here before the season starts? What's the one thing you're like, if they do this, as long as they don't botch the rest of it, I'll feel positive about where they're at. Is there any one thing for you?
Following the team? No.
Well, look, I think that's the universal take for that one.
On the field stuff. I don't know. I'm prepared for Deron Payne to leave, but it'd be fun to cover that again. I mean, it's really fun watching Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen play football next to each other. It's,
yeah. You know, just because
I think my serious answer would be to lock up Cam Curl, just for the importance of what they do on defense and how important he is to that unit. And I think that would answer some concerns of, all right, like, is this actually going to be a lame duck year? Are they just not going to do anything and just try and get by and let the next guy figure it out? If they actually commit to Cam Curl and make this sort of commitment, I think that's more of a, it would be a promising thing if you're a Washington fan.
Yeah, for sure. I'll just say that even though addressing a problem is not the same as solving it, I will be positive if they really, in a sincere way, go and try fixing the offensive line. What they did this past year, I'm not talking about Scherf, but going with Andrew Norwell and Trey Turner, two older guys who were on the wrong end of their careers, you know, not the quickest guys anymore, but because of that familiarity with Carolina and all that, they kept those, they went for those guys. They need to go out, whether it's using, you know, a first and a third round pick, signing a vet, they need to go out and address that. If they do that, then it's going to make the Sam Howell situation better. It'll make the Brian Robinson situation better if they do that. But if they come back with, you know, and I think they will, but if they come back with largely this group and they add, you know,
Chris Paul and Sam Cosmi as your starting guards, you're not rolling with that.
Well, I mean, it could be fine. I mean, Sam Cosmi is arguably better there, but then, like, what do you, you know, is Cornelius Lucas still the right tackle? What are you doing at center? I won't even care. I mean, look, I'm realistic. You can't fix every problem at all the time. So if you bring back Andrew Norwell, okay. I'm not going to yell, but, like, you've got to address the center spot. You've got to address right tackle. And then perhaps maybe there's other things to do. So if they do that, right, if they do that, I'll feel pretty good about their situation, at least in terms of the way I just laid it out, that I'll feel positive about, because if you don't have an offensive line, I don't care what else you have.
Yeah, no, completely agree. I mean, especially if you want to be a run-first offense, it starts in the trenches, to quote Cornelius Lucas.
All right, before I let you go, I just have to let you go. You're the Wizards guy here with me. Yesterday, a report came out by The Athletic that the Wizards are looking to do some things with possibly trade Rui Hachimura. that for some people might come out of the blue and be like, whoa, why are you trading him? He's scoring pretty well this year. Recent first round pick. You know, he's clearly athletic and all that stuff. What, you know, why would you even consider that? I am in total favor of this, purely for like it's almost like aesthetic reasons. I do not personally enjoy watching him play basketball a ton. He could certainly score, but the passing is non-existent. His defense is very hit or miss, to say the least. And they also have a bit of a logjam there. Even if Kyle Kuzma and Kristaps Porzingis both left in the offseason, which would be a huge issue on another front, it wouldn't bother me if they also move Hachimura and then they kind of had to start over. So I'm intrigued by it, but that's very different than saying they're going to get anything for him. And I wonder where the rumor is even coming from. But anyway, you were out there the other day. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, they couldn't agree to an extension. I don't necessarily think it's an either or situation. I honestly think they should trade Kuzma. I mean, as good as well as he's played, I don't know. I think the time to sell on him now is hot, and we saw what happened with Bradley Beal. Like, I understand their perspective of wanting to keep a guy like Bradley Beal. Kyle Kuzma, to me, is not that. As well as he's played, maybe he's even had a better season than Beal. But strike while the iron's hot for a change. And it's scorching with Kuzma right now. And I actually think they could get something valuable for him.
Right. I mean, in that case, the issue is you really have to trust that he's going to stay. Clearly, Bradley Beal was in the bag. They felt very confident, and as they should have. I don't feel that confident about Kuzma. I'm not around the team anymore the way I was, but I body language, the things I've heard, I think they need to consider doing that right, independent of Rui. But anyway, that's all I got for
you. Like, you know, if I thought the line in Cham's story about, you know, they're going to be dangerously close to the tax if they re-sign Kuzma, Porzingis, or Porzingis opts in and then Beal, like, there's just this. There's always going to be a ceiling, and even if you wanted to try and build out from the middle, per se, like...
No.
I know that. You and I both agree that decision is nuts, but if you're actually trying to do that, I don't necessarily know if Kyle Kuzma helps you build out from the middle. I mean, I think building out from the middle would be to keep Beal, trade Kuzma for, you know, David Roddy of the Grizzlies, and see if he develops into a nice young star. Like, something like that makes more sense to me than keeping Kuzma.
I hear you, man. All right, well, we'll talk more. Now that the Commander's over, I'll get some more Wizards-centric episodes, but, you know, we'll always talk Commanders here. Always fun to talk with Matt Parris. Follow him on Twitter, @Matthew_Parris, P-A-R-A-S. Read him at the Washington Times. And, you know, go. He's the funny guy on the beat. So, you know, make sure you appreciate his humor. My guy, I appreciate it as always.